This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, as the toxic drug crisis continues throughout the province and into northern BC, the overall numbers for 2024 saw a slight dip. However, 102 toxic drug-related deaths were recorded in the city of Prince George. Ian Gregg at CIFA Radio brings us more. Airport Elementary in the Comox Valley will have a new primary learning community starting in September. Heather Watson at CHLY in Nanaimo has that story. And Pam Hassan in Smithers at CICK News speaks to Member of Parliament Taylor Bacharach about the Liberal government's plan to privatize the most profitable corridor of the Via Passenger Rail. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to The Scoop.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. Statistical data has been released for the year of 2024 in relation to the ongoing toxic drug crisis occurring across the province of BC, even Canada, but especially here in northern BC. The good news is that the provincial average of deaths related to toxic drugs are on a decline in the province of BC. However, the number is still significant here in northern BC. Dr. Raquel Kling, medical health officer for Northern Health, joins us over the line today from Vancouver. Dr. Kling, can you tell us what we're looking at here in Prince George and what the northern region is looking like as well? These are two systems that are tracked separately with their own statistics.
Yeah, so while the provincial average might be starting to drop, you know, we are still seeing a significant number of overdoses in the north, and the north still continues to have the highest rate of overdoses in the province. And unfortunately, Prince George recorded their highest number of unregulated drug deaths in the last 10 years, and that happened in 2024. So unfortunately, we're still seeing a large burden of overdose deaths, which is very sad.
Specific to Prince George, those numbers were 110 deaths in 2024 compared to 92 deaths in 2023. And specific to the Northern Health region, if we look at unregulated drug deaths per 100,000 people, that was 70.2 in 2023, down to 67.2 in 2024. Looking ahead, are those numbers dropping at all here, or are they still climbing?
You know, with such small numbers in the north, it's hard to make any assessments of where things are going in the north right now. But while we're still recording toxic drug-related deaths, it's still too many.
When I was speaking to a member of a nonprofit group here in our community, Pounds, which is based here in Prince George, they referred to a possibility of why overall deaths could be on the decline is that although there was a huge spike in toxic drug-related deaths in and around 2016, the concept of diffusion of services, more intervention programs, and general awareness has grown since then, and some of these programs are finally starting to have an impact. But in our area, our northern region, those services are just starting to come online. They haven't really been around long enough to have a significant impact on the numbers. Would you agree with that assessment, or what kind of factors do you think are contributing to a reduction of toxic drug-related deaths in the province overall?
Yeah, I can't really comment on what's happening in the province. I do trust the opinion from Pounds and their team. They provide really excellent service and are well connected to people who use substances. So if that's their assessment, I think, you know, that's something we can listen to. But yeah, I do agree that, you know, we're working on increasing our range of services in the north and do have a lot of great places that do offer really good services, overdose prevention services, drug checking, and other types of services such as pounds and other sites in the north.
Deaths resulting from toxic drugs continue to disproportionately affect females more than males. Is there any evidence or speculation that could perhaps begin to explain this imbalance, or is it still as yet unknown?
I don't think we have quite enough information. You know, everyone has different ways of using substances and different places that they like to use substances. And I think we need to do a bit more assessment to understand why. That being said, it's always important for anyone who uses substances to make sure they know how to be safe when using substances. So, you know, making sure to carry naloxone at all times, not using alone and making a plan for not using alone. Using an overdose prevention sites like Pounds or the Prince George Harm Reduction Clinic if you're in Prince George. And there's lots of other ways available. And it's important that people who use substances know their different options and how to stay safe when using substances.
In your estimation, are there specific challenges that our community here in Prince George and the northern region as a whole has versus, say, the situation in the lower mainland? Is there any particular barriers that may be contributing to the larger number of deaths per 100,000 people?
There's a few things that can make a difference. So in the north, with our geography so spread across a very large region, and it's really hard to ensure that their services, exactly where somebody needs it when they need to use a substance. Whereas in the lower mainland, there's a large congregation of substance users. So that's one potential reason. You know, another reason you were experiencing in the north right now is the cold. Like specifically, you know, when it's cold, it really does push people to use substances indoors, perhaps like using at home alone where others can't be there to witness or monitor for an overdose. Yeah, those are a few things that can contribute. And then, of course, something that happens all over the province is that we know that substances are incredibly toxic and that's contributing to significant deaths everywhere.
Has there been a delay in substances present in the lower mainland, perhaps years ago, finally making their way into community of Prince George, and that is one of the contributing factors of the significant number of toxic drug-related deaths that we're seeing?
You know, at some points in time, we have seen that or heard that through people who use substances, but, you know, in the north, substances can get to Prince George or other areas of the north through various means. It's not just through the lower mainland. So it's not always true that things start in the lower mainland and then make its way up north.
Certainly there are a lot of contributing factors to the situation that we have here locally in Prince George and throughout the northern region. What is working when it's coming to addressing safer use of illicit substances and just the overall reduction of toxic drug-related deaths?
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the most important things that's working is just how pervasive naloxone kits are and how available they are for people who use substances. And we do know that does make a difference, making sure that people carry naloxone and that it's widely available. You know, the availability of our overdose prevention sites also are making a difference in reducing overdose deaths. And some newer interventions that have been shown to be quite useful are some of the apps that, you know, people can use if they're using a substance at home alone or without somebody who can monitor them. It's an app that they can use that they could trigger the call of EMS if there is an overdose.
Many members of our community have reached a point where they are now really aware of this issue in our community and even our region. And some are motivated to help, but they don't necessarily know where to put that energy into. Are there existing programs out there in which individuals can contribute to help address this ongoing crisis?
Absolutely. I think the first thing that anyone can do is get themselves a naloxone kit and get naloxone training. That's, you know, a good way to show that you want to make sure that people are safe and you have a tool with you at all times that you can use to reverse an overdose. And that's a great way people can get involved and show support. Another thing that people can do is, you know, support their local overdose prevention sites. They're all, you know, the sites are listed on the Towards the Heart website. That's towardstheheart.com. And yeah, they can get involved with their local site and see how they can support their local overdose prevention site. Another way that people can get involved is getting involved with Overdose Awareness Day, which is in April every year. And that's another good way of showing support and, you know, trying to show that it's not okay that we're losing so many lives to the overdose crisis.
As far as next steps in addressing this crisis in Prince George and looking at the Northern Health region, what are some initiatives that Northern Health is doing or is up to?
Yeah, Northern Health has a great spectrum of services. They're always looking to expand the spectrum of services and availability in all communities. And, you know, just keeping doing what we're doing is what we can do to keep trying to battle the crisis that's happening right now.
That is Northern Health Medical Officer Dr. Raquel Kling commenting on the marginal drop of toxic drug-related deaths in Prince George and Northern Region, which Northern Health serves, noted in the Government of British Columbia's Coroner's Service Report, reviewing the 2024 year. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
This is a CHLY and CVOX news update. A brand new early education program or primary learning community is coming to Airport Elementary next fall for kids in kindergarten through grade 3. This innovative new program caught the attention of many families, with over 60 participants attending the Zoom information session January 29th, and approximately 30 families submitting expression of interest forms so far through the month of February. The Leading Edge class structure is designed to be a demonstration program, aiming to show educators throughout School District 71 and beyond what is possible with this unique style of blended learning environment. Lisa Peterson-Skeen is SD71's District Principal of Early Learning and Child Care. She says what makes this program unique is a combination of play-based and place-based learning, as well as the unusual format of one day learning from home, 3 days at school, and one day out in the community.
It is a brand new concept to the Valley, and what we're really trying to do with the program is align all our early learning documents from the ministry, which is the early learning framework, learning in the primary years, the core competencies, as well as our literacy and numeracy frameworks and our school district strategic plan.
Peterson-Skeen says this work has been in progress for a long time, starting as many as 10 years ago, when a small group of principals, vice principals, and teachers got together to look at better ways to meet the needs of early learning students in play-based environments. Peterson-Skeen says this work influenced the primary learning community operating in the Qualicum School District, which is now in its fourth year.
It has been very successful. There was a smaller first cohort as people started to understand the program, and now the program is full and does have a wait list every year for students to attend it.
Peterson-Skeen says that what makes the new primary learning community coming to Airport Elementary unique from the one at Qualicum is its weekly schedule. Every Tuesday through Thursday is spent at Airport Elementary, whether that learning is taking place indoors or on school grounds, while Mondays are spent learning from home and Fridays are reserved for community outings. One of the core tenets of the program is play-based learning, which Peterson-Skeen describes as an educational approach that allows children to take an active role in shaping their own learning experience while being guided or framed by teachers through joint play.
What we know from research is students learn best when they play. So the more play that we can give them in longer chunks of time, the deeper the learning they do. When we talk about play, we are not talking about free play. So it's not a free for all. The children, it's a very structured environment where the children have choices of what they can do, explore, investigate, that is set up by the teacher. And the teacher is an active participant in that play where they will be scaffolding learning, reviewing concepts, doing teaching, observing, questioning, etc. So it looks far different than what people would see as like a center time or choice time, what it's called in a regular classroom at school.
Peterson Skeen gives an example of play-based learning as a play area, such as wooden structures that can be used with dramatic play to become anything from a science center to a veterinary clinic. Through this play, the teacher can foster literacy and numeracy skills, making it interesting to the children by incorporating the things they find exciting.
It's just having the teacher come in, know where the children are in their learning, and then take literacy and numeracy concepts to help expand their knowledge and move them forward.
Another fundamental piece of the program is place-based learning, which Peterson Skeen describes.
Place-based learning recognizes that learning occurs within and beyond the school building. So this approach connects children to their local surroundings and communities, enabling rich and meaningful opportunities to learn outdoors and through engagement with the community. It has also a strong underpinning of understanding of our local Comox First Nation and the history that our community has. So that history through stories and teachings help build a better understanding of the community that the students live in.
A large part of this place-based focus of the program is the weekly community day, which Peterson Skeen says could be anything from a collaboration with a local river restoration society to visiting a business and seeing how it runs.
The community day will be dependent on the teacher, but what I see it looking like is children having the opportunity to go to places over time. So we're seeing how places change. For instance, they may go to the Puntlich River in the fall, in the winter, in the spring, and then early summer, and looking at how the ecosystem changes during those times.
She says the key factor is that these are experiences that will be relevant throughout the children's lives. She says that another core facet is the multi-age nature of the K-3 class, the only program in the district with a four-grade span. Peterson Skeen says this allows students to learn from observing and interacting with classmates of different ages and experience levels.
And working, collaborating with each other. But yeah, sometimes it is just observing and watching what someone else does and then, I wonder if I can do that or how can I do it differently? So it just builds, everything builds upon everything else.
Peterson Skeen says that not only is this immersive learning environment beneficial to the students, it is experiential learning for the teachers as well.
My hope is that as we have educators from across the district come to this program, I hope that they will implement some of the play and place-based pedagogies into their classrooms. And then my goal would be down the road is that we have a program like this in every school for students, that our classrooms shift so that we are really focused on play and play-based teachings.
According to Peterson Skeen, Airport Elementary's new primary learning community class list should be finalized by the end of February, as a couple of spots are still open, with the traditional school district staffing process beginning in late April. The program is expected to begin with the new school year in September. For CHLY and CVOX News, this is Heather Watson.
Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. NDP transportation critic Taylor Bachrach is on the news today to speak about the NDP's position of Via Rail privatizing its most profitable corridor on the track and how passenger rail travel between Toronto to Quebec City going private will affect passenger travelers in the Skeena region.
Is Taylor Bachrach. I'm a member of Parliament for Skeena-Buckley Valley.
Okay, Taylor, could we start just very plainly, if you could tell me your concerns about the privatization of passenger rail on the Toronto-Quebec City corridor by the federal government?
Sure. Federal government has just announced the next step in the process to build high-speed rail. We lag far behind the rest of the world when it comes to passenger rail. And it's about time that into the modern age and started moving people efficiently and affordably and in a low emissions way. The challenge and the problem we have with the plan is that the Liberals want to privatize that corridor. And corridor also happens to be the busiest corridor for Via Rail, corporation in Canada, that operates passenger rail service. And when they privatize, they're going to rob Via Rail of about 80 to 90% of their current. Now, our concern is that Via Rail will be left with a fraction of former passenger rail and tasked with operating all of these long-distance routes in the rest of rural Canada, they're going to essentially be left with these much less profitable rural routes. And it's just not going to be feasible. They'll put in a really untenable situation, and future governments will have their eyes on cutting them off. So that's our fear. Privatization kind of sucks when it comes to passenger rail, and we're pushing back against it. We really believe in passenger rail. We believe in high-speed rail. We want the government to build public, not for private profit.
The Liberals are saying that this will improve service for the end user who use VIA to travel. But when they're saying that, are you kind of reading in that that means for that line and not for all Canadians?
Yeah, absolutely. This high-speed rail project is only going to improve service for people between Toronto and Smithers and Burns Lake, Fraser Lake and Terrace. Prince Rupert are a heck of a long ways away from Toronto. So I don't think this plan is going to see any service for folks in our region. If anything, over the long term, going to see service reduction. Government is going to be under pressure to those rural services that require a heavy subsidy.
So what are the NDP, who are you connecting with now, and how are you working to try to work with the Liberals to get them to understand the importance of keeping VIA Rail a Canadian-owned Crown corporation?
Yeah, we've been using all the tools in our toolbox to try to push the message, working with Unifor, which is the union that represents a lot of the workers on VIA Rail, working with the organization Transportation Action Canada, and I've been using my tools, transport, to try to raise Parliament. Transport Committee, which I sit on, has convened hearings on this topic, and we've heard from expert witnesses, together our report. The other parties are a lot warmer to privatization than the NDP is. We want to see high-speed rail, but we want the government to do it using a public model. And the vision really is, if the government were to build high-speed rail using the existing Crown Corporation, using VIA Rail, then those profits that the private sector currently thinks those profits go to the public, be used by VIA Rail to improve rail service all across Canada.
The private consortium who will take over this highly profitable Toronto-Quebec City corridor is called Alto, which consists of a mobility engineering firm, Systra, a Quebec-owned investment firm, Atkins Realis Group, formerly known as SNC-Lavalin, two public transit companies, one from Montreal and one from France, as well as Air Canada.
Passengers are going to choose the train instead of the airplane. Mm-hmm. Now, Air Canada is one of the companies in the consortium. Their interest as an airline is going to get confused and mixed up their interest as the operator of a train service. And we really think that Canadian government should show leadership and should be providing it to people off those short-haul flights and onto the train. Is that really efficient way to move?
Mm-hmm. And bringing it back to just local in the Skeena area here, do you feel that people in the Skeena that they know or that they're passionate about this? Because I'll be honest, not too many people use the train. And a lot of the reason being that the schedule is, it can be long. If you want to get from Smithers to Prince Rupert, for example, sometimes it can be like a 4-day round trip sort of thing. So what are you hearing from people within the Skeena when they hear about this privatization of this corridor line and how it affects them?
People really, they go around the world, they see other countries that have effective passenger rail systems, and they say, we want that here in Canada. Or they're of a generation that actually remembers when we had an effective passenger rail service. So I think it's an idea that has a lot of support in the Canadian population and in our region. It's just that it requires government leadership and vision and investment.
Yep.
And our concern is that building this high-speed rail in the way the Liberals have chosen to do it is actually going to take us in the opposite direction. We wake up in 30 years and not have any public passenger rail in this region whatsoever.
Is there much conversation that you're having with our Skeena Stikine riding MLAs about this as well?
They really like the idea of an effective passenger rail service in the country, but they don't like spending public money and making investments, right? And like that conundrum. It takes some vision and it takes some courage to build big public nation building projects. And high speed rail is definitely one of those. No matter how we build it, it's going to cost tens of billions of dollars. And yet at the same time, this is a Liberal government, what, $35 $1 billion buying and building an oil pipeline. Imagine if those dollars had been invested in high-speed rail. Imagine the economic development potential. Imagine the legacy that will leave for you. It'd be really tremendous.
Thank you to Taylor Bachrach for his time. As the NDP transportation critic, MP Bachrach says that by 2030, new Via Rail passenger trains could be marking a significant step towards securing the long-term future of passenger rail in the province. However, for reliable service, Canada needs passenger priority legislation. But CN, who owns the tracks, prioritizes freight, causing frequent delays for Via Rail. Implementing passenger priority laws could help Via maintain a more consistent schedule and improve service efficiency. That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.